Okay, good morning. Oh, wow, that's exciting. We have a jam-packed room in here, so we'll try and talk loud enough so everyone can hear. It's 8:30 here in New Orleans on the second day, so I'm sure you're all very excited about the opportunities of the week. So I'm here to talk to you about SharePoint on Windows Azure in Infrastructure as a Service. And so we have two other presenters as well. And the way we're going to split this up is I'm going to talk a little bit about Windows Azure in general. And then we're going to go into some details on SharePoint and then some examples, actually, of how to deploy SharePoint in a pretty easy way in Windows Azure. And so my name is Corey Sanders. My other two co-presenters, actually, I have them up here on the slide. It's a wonderful picture of people working. And this was actually us working on these slides. So I have Michael up there on the right, and then Paul down here, and then, of course, I'm here. I hate these, like, stock photos, so I always muck with them. And that's why they don't let me around the marketing people. So it's actually also terrible paint shop work there. Okay, so without further ado, my name is Corey Sanders, and I'm a part of the Windows Azure team. And I'm going to tell you about specifically the Windows Azure portion of the house. So the session is 200, a little bit of 300 content, just to sort of give some perspective here. I'll start with a little bit of the overview stuff. And then as we get a little bit deeper into SharePoint, we sort of touch on the 300 content for SharePoint specifically, just to give some prep there. So for Windows Azure, one of the things that we're really excited about with Windows Azure and why we've really been building a lot of capabilities in Windows Azure in the infrastructure as a service space is around being able to take these workloads and move them. So we're very passionate around things like SharePoint, SQL Server, BizTalk Server, being able to say, you can run this on-premises. You can also run it in Windows Azure. And so all of the work that we did with the infrastructure as a service offering was around making sure these things worked really well. In fact, SharePoint was our exit criteria for shipping infrastructure as a service. We had to make sure that that sucker worked. And so we'll show you actually how it works today. And so that allows you to move those capabilities back and forth, move those disks back and forth, and I'll show you a little bit more there later. So from the Windows Azure side, one of the reasons why you may consider Windows Azure for a SharePoint workload, if you're doing something with SharePoint, obviously Office 365 is a great option. And there are a lot of great sessions about Office 365 here at this conference. A couple of the reasons why you may consider that Windows Azure would actually be a better opportunity for you, just some of the capabilities as part of SharePoint, if you're using full trust code, for example, if you're doing an internet site, these are the things that you may say, hey, Windows Azure may be a good opportunity for me. Or the best example that we do have, a lot of dev test. And so we're seeing a ton of dev test of SharePoint in Windows Azure. It again comes back to that sort of usage-based, flexible, agile deployment. You can spin things up quickly, and Michael will show that a little bit later, and completely automated. Right? So Michael's going to walk through these really complex PowerShell scripts that allow you to spin up a full farm with the click of a button. The other aspects, of course, is that it is hybrid and the hardware is managed. Right? So one of the powers that you get with a Windows Azure offer is that the hardware is managed by us. Hardware dies, we move things, you don't even know. And so that's a big part of the offering. And of course, hybrid allows you to connect to your existing workloads and allow people to kind of talk into whatever you're deploying or whatever you're building. And so these are kind of the reasons why you may say, hey, Windows Azure sounds like a great place for me. It is a great place, and it's a great place for me too. So, okay, the Windows Azure principles. So just getting started, there's sort of six big things that we look at for Windows Azure. Economics and usage base is really a big aspect of why Windows Azure is so powerful. You really only pay for what you use. And if you were listening to Scott yesterday in the keynote, we changed this even a little bit further in that you also only pay by the minute. Right? So there's no more rounding up. And also a little secret, probably don't share it too broadly, if you only run for 5 minutes, you actually don't pay at all. So if you run for less than 5 minutes, you made a mistake, you deployed something you didn't realize, go delete it. You won't get billed if it's under 5 minutes. And this is sort of our promise that, hey, maybe you make a mistake, we're not going to penalize you for 6 minutes, and you'll start paying for 6 minutes at that point. So the other aspect, of course, is the MSDN usage. So how many people have MSDN accounts in the room? Great. And how many people have activated those accounts on Windows Azure before this week? That's what I thought. Okay. So that's great, actually. It's great to see that new activation, that new excitement. I'll talk a little bit about that offer later, but it's a very powerful and very cheap offer that's going to just make things like running SharePoint in a dev test environment really great. The other aspect is, of course, the automated and elastic. We have a ton of PowerShell automation built into the system. We also have a ton of PowerShell automation and templates and samples that are available outside that you can go get from blogs and so on and so forth. A great example of built into the system, if you deploy a virtual machine using PowerShell, we actually enable remote PowerShell and WinRM on the box by default. We authenticate it based on the password that you choose, and you can, of course, use a certificate on the client side to make sure it's secure, but we authenticate it and open it up by default. So there's no tweaking, there's no mucking. If you just use PowerShell to spin up, you can immediately start using it using WinRM and be able to do a lot of things on that box. It also makes it really easy to both scale up and scale out. So I'll show you a quick example later when I get onto the portal of the ease of scaling up. But scaling out, of course, is if you are using these PowerShell scripts and you get good with them, it's really easy to go create multiple VMs, spin them up, use that same remote PowerShell capability, and continue to add on to them as you go. So very powerful stuff. And then, of course, the last two, managed hybrid, the ability to connect with the virtual network and be able to connect in a very secure way using a VPN tunnel. I'm going to show you a couple examples of that later and show you sort of the power of two different options, one a very dev test focused power, and then one, of course, of corporate full site-to-site power that you can get with this. And then always up, always on. With the availability that we offer you, you can spin up across multiple racks, and you can get a lot of availability without even having to think about it. So let me go into some details. So the IT Pro experience. One of the things we really wanted to focus when we built this solution was, how do we make sure that it's super easy to use for IT pros? I'm sorry, I've been at Microsoft too long. It's super easy. And so this involved three big things. One, of course, is this management portal that I'm going to walk through. The goal was to make it really powerful and easy while also very visually appealing, which I'm sure we're all big fans of. Scripting, of course, to fill in any of the gaps or any of the automation that you may want to do. We do have cross-platform scripting. For this room, it may be more interesting just to say PowerShell, but we do offer cross-platform if you're running from a Mac or you're running from a Linux box, for example. You can still do scripting using some of the tooling that we have available using Node. And then, of course, we also have just the underlying APIs. So if you're, if you're interested and excited about building a REST solution yourself, you can actually build the entire management portal yourself if you so chose. There's no special APIs there. And so the power that we give directly to our portal team, we also give to you to go rebuild if you choose. Great. And then, the next big thing that we do really think a lot about is the support for key server apps, and that's kind of why you guys are here. Obviously, SharePoint, we do support 2010 and 2013. The bold underline means we have an image in our gallery. So we do have a 2013 image in our gallery. It's a trial version, which means there's actually no cost to use it. We also have a ton of SQL images in our gallery. In fact, we have a lot of SQL images in our gallery. They fill the whole screen now. We're working on that experience. They put them out too fast for us. We do have 2008 R2 Standard Enterprise and, of course, 2012 Web Standard Enterprise in the gallery. We support the full list there, all the way back to R2. And then, of course, we have an additional set of server solutions that we support. We have a BizTalk server image in the gallery as well, but we also support a couple Dynamics versions, Forefront Identity Manager, Project Server, System Centers, and then Team Foundation Server, all as part of virtual machine deployments. So with that, actually, we have a session later today that's focused on SQL, if you're interested. It's MDC B406. With that, let me actually just walk you through a little bit on the portal and show you sort of what this looks like. How many people are familiar with the Windows Azure portal? It's a lot, mostly. Okay, I'll just spend a couple minutes on it then. I don't want to waste your time here. So you can see here we've got the portal. And on the left side, we have sort of all of the options that you have to be able to manage and use the systems in the portal. And so very simple things. You can hit New. And in this case, let me just show you Virtual Machine. And so we'll say virtual machine and from gallery. And so here, let me show platform images. Now, these are the ones that are supplied either by us or a partner who has then uploaded and deployed them here. So for example, the Linux images are deployed by our partners, and they will make it easy for you to spin up Linux as well as these SharePoint and SQL images. And so here you can see, obviously, just the stock 2012 and 2008 R2. We will have 2012 R2 available at launch. And so here we have SQL, and like I said, we have quite a few SQL images, and the list keeps growing. And so, in fact, SQL is making us have to rethink some of our UI here because they've got so many of these images. It's great. I don't mean to be critical of the SQL team. Oh, Paul, I told you to close my mail. Okay. My apologies. Then, of course, you can see SharePoint 2013 trial. And then, of course, we have a few of these Linux images. We have OpenSUSE, Celeste, Ubuntu, and then CentOS offered by OpenLogic. And so these are all the sort of stock images that are made available. And let me just kind of walk you through here just quickly how easy it is to deploy this. Well, let me actually do SQL 1. So R2, let's do SP2 standard. And so from here, I can pick the machine name, size. And so here you can see we offer a variety of sizes, from extra small, which is a shared core in 768 meg, all the way up to A7, which is 8 cores, 56 gig. You're probably wondering, why is it called A7? We ran out of extras as part of our names, and so we decided that we would just go to a non-descriptive name instead. And so once we got to extra large, we decided extra, extra, extra large was starting to get a little bit silly. So we just went to A6, A7, and that will continue from now on. So A7 is 8 cores, 56 gig. Let me just say Corey is my username. Okay. And then from there, you know, this is just the DNS name that I can use to connect it. I can choose to pick something here. I could also just shut this down and turn it off if I want to, if I'm going to go all through the back end. But so let me just say Corey DNS. Okay, that's available. And I'll just deploy it. Let's see. We have 6 regions that you can deploy to. I'll go ahead and deploy in East US. This is closest to us. Okay. And then as you can see here, like I said, let me zoom in. You can see that enable remote power. Oh, God. Enable remote PowerShell is clicked on by default. You can obviously click that off if you'd prefer, and then you can hit go, and that'll deploy. Okay. You can also see here I already have one deployed that's in the new stopped deallocated state, so this one's been deployed for a couple days, and I am not paying for it right now. I could go ahead and restart that if I wanted to, and it's got a couple endpoints already assigned to it that I've been using and playing with, and so I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Okay, the one last thing I want to show you while I'm here, as I show you sort of the power of these images, let me go back to the virtual machine section and click images here. And so another thing that I showed you, we have those credited partners, those Linux partners that have offered these images and continue to build them and service them and support them. But we also have a set of community available images. And so this is something that I do always like to show. Down here you can see, let me zoom in, you can see we have a browse VM depot. Okay, and these are actually community built and community available images. I'm not going to spend too much time on them, but if I click here, you can sort of see the options that I have. And so these are, we don't actually work with these partners. They upload them and they make them available. And so you can go through here and you can see a very long list of different products offered by different companies. A couple Drupal stacks here if you're interested, GitLab, et cetera, Joomla. And so these are just kind of community-built images that are available, and they're all open source-based images. And so we do like to make these available. You can click on them, move them into your account, and deploy them. And so again, some additional power there. Okay, let me actually go back here. Excellent. Okay, so the other big thing that we really love about the Windows Azure offer is the storage manageability and mobility aspects of it. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, part of the goal of this platform is that you can just move these workloads. So that could just mean moving the workload, installing it in the cloud, using it directly in the cloud. It could also mean taking VHDs and moving them, right? So if you're running anything on premises that's using VHDs or can convert to VHD, we can run it in Windows Azure. And so, you know, we see a lot of interest and excitement over the ability to take these images and move them back and forth. This means also that if you have the licenses on premises, you can take something that you built in the cloud and bring it back down. And so that's a very interesting dev test scenario where you can build something in the cloud and you can bring it back down on premises. And so it allows this mobility because we use just the basic Windows Server 2012. We use the Windows Server 2012 hypervisor as well. And so we are very excited over using the same technology that you may or may not be using, hopefully may be using, in your on-premise environment. And it makes this sort of transition and mobility really, really easy. The other aspect of this is the fact that our storage disks are triplicate copied. So everything that you're running, if you just saw me spin up this SQL server, you saw the other VM that was running, these disks are actually stored in Windows Azure Storage. And so reads and writes to the box are not going to any local disks. They're going straight to Windows Azure Storage, especially specifically if you don't have cache turned on, which is the default setting for your data disk. So if you hook up a data disk to a SQL server and you start writing to it, those writes are going directly to Windows Azure Storage, which means triplicate copies and high durability. It means disks can fail on Windows Azure Storage and you'll never know. It just keeps running because we have two copies sitting there waiting to pick up the slack. So this is one of the exciting things about this, is that we sort of hide that all away from you. You're running a virtual machine, you see these disks in your storage account, you get to play with them, but it's all triplicate copies, it's all highly durable. And so I'll actually just show you quickly what I'm talking about here, just to show you. I have a Cloud Explorer example here. And so here you can see in my test account, I have a whole bunch of these VMs up and running. And if you, let's see here, these are actually up and running right now. So you can see here I have these VHDs, and these are just being written to as we speak, right? And so it allows me to do some really interesting things. Because this is all in Windows Azure Storage, I can do download. So now I can just take this VHD and take it on premises. I can do copy. And so now I can say, great, let me just go paste this. And now I've got a copy here of this VHD. I've just backed up my system, right? And so, yes, I didn't cleanly shut it down, so it was sort of a backup right in the middle of running. I mean, it's the same thing as taking a VHD on a Hyper-V box and copying it. But I've done it instantaneously because it's all Windows Azure Storage, so it's a shadow copy, and we just take care of that for you. So I can even move this. I can create, you know, a backup folder and move this into the backup folder, or make another copy by accident. I've double backed it up now. Now I've got three copies, it looks like. Okay, we're done with this part. You get the point. That is a third-party tool, just to be clear. A very good one, but okay, anyway. I'm trying to share the blame, or at least put off the blame. Okay, the other big things, like I mentioned before, high availability features. The ability to go take your SharePoint farm or your SQL servers and be able to deploy them in a way that's going to avoid downtime is really important, especially because you know that we're using commodity hardware in the back end. And so when I say commodity hardware, here I've got a picture of a rack. This is actually a picture of a rack that we've deployed in one of our data centers. And so I point out the fact that, look, you've got these physical machines in this rack. And each one of these physical machines is a point of failure, right? They can die at any point. The other thing that we have in each one of these racks is we have a single power unit, and we have a single rack switch, a top of rack switch, as we call it. And so this is where the network goes through. So again, those are single points of failure. Right, so any of these things die, the physical machine, the top of rack switch, or the power unit, and the machines in that rack could be in trouble, right? And specifically, the power unit and top of rack switch can take the whole rack out until we go in and we fix it. And so how do we help avoid this problem impacting you? Well, what we do is we actually create a system such that you can avoid having to care. And so you see here in our data centers, we will split this up now across multiple racks. And so if you're saying, look, I want to deploy two virtual machines, let's say my two front ends of a SharePoint farm, if you place these into an availability set, which is a concept that we have in Windows Azure, we actually make sure that we place them across different racks. And so you don't have to know. You say, these two VMs are in one availability set. Awesome. We do all the hard work that says these now are in different racks, which means if one rack fails, the other one's still there. Right, and so you can see, I don't know if you saw the animation here, but you can see here the VM1 and VM2 on these two different racks. And they actually are orange when they light up. It's weird. Okay, and the other aspect of this, of course, is your front end. So if you're doing a SharePoint farm, for example, you also can just say, hey, these are part of a load balance set. Put them in port 80. You don't have to spin up a VM. You don't have to pay for this, actually. You just say, put them in a load balance set, and we then start load balancing traffic between them. You can configure probes as part of this and say, only load balance to this guy if he's getting this probe. Right? And so it allows you to get this control and this power by just saying, look, put them in a load balance set and you take care of it, and then we do. And so the example that I had was, look, that rack goes down. We actually detect it. The load balancer will immediately start diverting traffic to the other VM. And so you maintain that uptime without having to do any of the hard work. Right? And so we manage the load balancer. It's completely software-based on our side, and it's highly available. So we also make sure that load balancer is spun across multiple racks, and make sure that we're also not impacted by any downtime that may be happening from the physical side. And so this is how we give you that high availability in a very, very simple way. And I'm sure Michael's going to show a little bit about that when he walks through his scripts. Great. And this is how we maintain our SLA. So our availability SLA is 99.95% uptime, and it includes all of the things I just talked about. So it includes connectivity to the VM, it includes VMs across multiple racks, and it makes sure that you do get that uptime that you expect when you span them across multiple racks. Great. We do have a session that's focused all on DR, and it's coming later this week. It's MDC B371 if you're interested. It focuses on DR, HA, all aspects like that. So just in case you have some passion in that area. I love DR. Okay, let me quickly show you what I mean from the load balancer perspective. No more copying here. Okay, and so quickly what I have here, let me just show you real fast, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Michael's going to spend a lot of time, but just to sort of prove that it's real, here's a PowerShell script that I've written that will go in and actually spin up a set of 6 virtual machines. And so let me just quickly show you what this looks like down here. So you can see here I can, it sets the subscription name, it sets the storage account, the location, the administrative password, all these things are set as part of the PowerShell command. And here I set the availability set, as I talked about, and the load balance set. And then it's very, very simple. I go through a for loop, as you can see here. And I'm not going to spend too much time on this. And what I actually do as part of that for loop is create a VM. And so here, very, very simply, here's the VM config, the name, instance size, image name, administrative password, and then the endpoints that I want to create. So here I'm creating a one that's port 80, and then I have a direct HTTP that goes to a special port as well. And so this goes through, it runs, it takes about, I run spin 6 VMs up, it takes less than 15 minutes to spin up these 6. What I also do is using remote PowerShell, I flip on IIS, and I put in some content. And so let me quickly show you what this looks like. And so here I have, you can see up here, oops, that's not the button I wanted to hit. You can see up here, this is the DNS name that I've selected, so Cori Direct LB Demo 2, a very descriptive name. And so I've created this ahead of time, and I spun up these VMs, and so what I'm going to do here is just hit F5, and you see I moved to VM3, and hit F5 back to VM2. So this is the load balancing. This is showing me moving back and forth. And it's actually load balancing because IE does some interesting things here. It actually picks random ports when it connects out. So a load balancer is actually, for people who are excited about networking, which you may or may not be, we use a 5-tuple system. And so what that means is that we try to maintain the same connectivity if you're coming in from the same IP and port. But IE picks different ports every time, so you'll see, you do end up getting load balance across the instances. So there's VM5, VM4, et cetera. And so this is load balancing across those 6 instances. I also set it up so you can get some direct access. And so each one of them also has a port that goes directly to it using the same DNS name, right? So here you can see 30,003, and let me move this to 30,005. And there I moved to VM5, right? And so I'll share out this. We'll put this script up on the blog as well, so you can go play with it a little bit. But that's kind of just an example of the load balancing and how that all works. Okay. And I'm not gonna drill in too deep here on hybrid networking. There's a couple sessions that focus on this, but I just wanted to spend a couple minutes on it. So, one of the exciting things about hybrid networking is we sort of have 2 ways in the door. We have one way which is called a site-to-site connectivity. And what this does is it actually opens up the entire corporate network to the entire Windows Azure network that you've spun up. So you control the network that you're selecting. And so when you spin up virtual machines, you can say, hey, I want this to go in this subnet with this IP range, right, to make sure that it doesn't conflict with what you're running on premises. And so you control that, and we virtualize that entire network for you, making it very easy for you to say, look, I have a hardware device. I'm going to connect to a gateway that we spin up on your behalf. And you now can see these instances running as if they're running a part of your corporate network. Which is very powerful. It allows you to spin up these SharePoint farms and use them as if they were running on premises. We actually have recently announced some very exciting changes to this. Originally, we only supported for those devices a Cisco and Juniper device. We've now moved to supporting Citrix, F5, WatchGuard, and, of course, software in the Windows Server 2012 solution. And so as part of that VPN device that you can connect to the cloud, you now have all the options that you may want to be able to connect, including a software-based option. And this is all, again, site-to-site using a few different protocols and so on. And so you have that power and connectivity possibility. And we do have the session on virtual networks. It was actually yesterday afternoon, but you can go look it up. It's MDC B360 if you're interested. Great session. And so a good one to go take a look at. The other aspect that we do have is called point-to-site. So as I mentioned before, the connectivity that we offer with site-to-site is your full corporate network connected to whatever you've spun up in Windows Azure. And so the virtual network that you've spun up. But you know what? Maybe that's actually not the right level of security or control that you want. Right? And so point-to-site gives a little bit of a different approach, which is each individual box can connect, but they don't connect the rest of the corporate network to it. Right, and so what actually happens is you install and run this little tool, and it will just change the routing on that box to go to that virtual network. It still uses the software VPN solution, and it still is highly secure using IPsec. So it's still a secure connection, but it's just a single box. And so it allows remote workers to be able to connect, perhaps, to that same virtual network without having to go through this expensive and somewhat unreliable VPN device. It also could even allow individual computers behind the firewall to connect if you so choose, right? And so these guys can get out using 443 as the port, and they can just connect, and it's just a secure transfer. And so it allows that easy connectivity story without necessarily having to hook up or set up to the entire corporate network. And so these options allow you to do things with dev tests. This is very powerful, right? Because now your developers and your testers, who, if you've set up a lab for them, they can connect without any sort of additional hubbub back on premises. Okay, and we do have a couple sessions focusing on point-to-site that have not yet happened. We have one later today, actually, the dev test session later today. We'll spend quite a bit of time on this. Okay, and the last one here, IaaS, PaaS, and agility. So the couple things that I just want to mention, and I'm going to show just a quick screen on the portal, and then I'm going to hand it off here to my next co-presenter. IaaS and PaaS, we're very passionate about this. Obviously, infrastructure as a service, we want to make sure this just works. It's just great, right? Everything about it's just going to be fun to use, it's easy to deploy, et cetera. However, we do believe a lot in our PaaS story and a lot of different parts of our PaaS story, whether it be SQL databases, whether it be worker roles, or whether it be the very easy and cheap websites. And so we want to make sure these things all play well together. So if you're using a website but you have a SQL server on a virtual machine in infrastructure as a service, great, no problem. You spin them up all in the same account, same bill, same rules and regulations that you may want to put on those instances. And so these sorts of ability to spin these things up in different orders and different ways is one of the powers that we really believe in. And I just want to show you fast to show you kind of what I'm talking about here. And this is some of the extension of our platform as a service offering. We have this really extensive offering in our store that allows third parties to spin up these platform as a service solutions as well. And so these are also part of the thing that you can integrate into your application. And so you can see here we've got AppDynamics, we've got Spera, ClearDB, et cetera, MongoLab, New Relic, right? And so whatever you may want to use with these, you can spin them up using our store with the third-party solution and integrate that in. I'm not going to spend too much time on this since it's a SharePoint session, but it's worth mentioning. So last couple things. Pay by the minute. I mentioned this. You've probably heard this. The key thing is we don't round up. Very complicated animation to show this. I think it's pretty clear, but I had a lot of fun with this one. So, okay, fine. Okay, I'm done. Okay, this is also a complex animation I'm going to go through quickly. When you stop your VMs, we stop billing you. This is a big change for us, actually. If you spend any time on our competitors, it seems silly that we're making a big deal out of this, perhaps. But it's a change for us, so it's worth calling out. We used to not do this. We now do. So if you stop your VM, it remembers the endpoints. It remembers the disks attached, but it doesn't charge you. It deallocates them, right? So they're no longer running on the system, and then you can restart them at any point. And so this, again, a great dev test story. You come in at 9, you start your VMs, you go home at 5, you kill your VMs, you don't pay overnight. Right, and so in this case, we used to charge you even when you weren't filling up gas, and now we only charge you when you do fill up gas. Anyway, okay, that's fun. That's fun for me. Okay, let me just spend a quick couple minutes on the MSDN offer. We did change the MSDN usage offer pretty dramatically. First of all, MSDN products can now be run in virtual machines. It's a big change. So you can take Visual Studio, SharePoint, whatever images that you get from MSDN, you can now run them in virtual machines for dev test purposes. We used to not allow that. That is now changing. We have a single monetary credit for MSDN. We used to have this plethora of different metrics and numbers for each one of these line items in Windows Azure. We now just give you dollars, and you can use them however you want to. And it's, again, very focused on dev test usage. Here are the dollars, 50, 100, and 150. And then we offer this reduced rate. So, of course, SQL and BizTalk, the per-hour images I showed you, the standard price on the left, the MSDN price is all just 6 cents an hour. And so you can see the savings on this is pretty gigantic if you're doing this for dev tests. It's just really easy to use. And then we have more on dev tests later today. Okay, that's kind of the Windows Azure walkthrough. I want to hand it over to Paul Stubbs, who's going to take over and talk quite a bit about the work that he's done. So here you go, Paul.
Thanks, Corey. Mm-hmm. Welcome, everyone. So as Corey said, my name is Paul Stubbs. I'm an architect on the Windows Azure COE, or Center of Excellence in Microsoft Services. So we travel around the world doing large-scale, real-world implementations of Windows Azure, including things like SharePoint, which is really hot these days. So as Corey mentioned earlier, you know, most of the time you probably want to move to something like Office 365, a SaaS model, a software as a service model, for a whole bunch of reasons, you know, lower cost, ease of management and operations, and so on and so forth. But there are cases where you may not fit. There may be features. You may be doing FIZ, SharePoint for internet sites, right? There may be other kind of features that just don't fit in that model. Maybe you have full trust solutions that you're not ready to migrate. And so the running SharePoint on IaaS is actually a great option. And in fact, we went back to SharePoint conference back in November, where Corey and I were presenting, and we actually stood up all of the hands-on labs for 10,000 attendees on the previously preview version of IaaS. And we actually had 1,800 virtual machine labs of SharePoint running in sort of a dev mode. So it was a huge kind of a test of running a large number. We were actually spread across two data centers. We were spread across the West Coast and APAC data centers. We actually used 14 subscriptions to load balance across. We had 1,800 VMs. We were using 13 terabytes of memory. And we were using 14,400 cores, right? So we had a very large implementation of a lot of VMs. And so we proved, even on the early builds, that we could actually run and provision and deprovision rather quickly a large number of dev test environments. Right, but then what we really wanted to do was we said, well, how can we build an actual production site that I would actually run SharePoint on and actually run my enterprise on a production SharePoint site? And so we decided to come up with this thing. We have this thing called the PLA, which is the product line architecture. You could do a Bing search on it and find it. It's an internal thing that Microsoft Services has. It's basically a document that describes kind of best practices for installing SharePoint and all the settings and things that you want to do. And so we said, well, let's take the PLA and let's actually install it in Windows Azure and see how different it is. And the sort of the big takeaway is that it really wasn't much different. There was really no significant changes that we had to do from the way that we do it on-premise to the way that we do it in the cloud in Windows Azure. Some of the changes that we did do, though, were around some of the things I'm going to talk about in a minute. But really, what were our goals? Our goals were to follow the PLA. We wanted to try to stay as close as possible to the way that you would think about an architect a farm on-premise to see if that would work, to validate that. We wanted to really balance performance and cost. We didn't want to just go say, hey, let's use the largest A7 box that we can do. An A6 and A7, I'd hate to see the names that got rejected, right? You know. So we decided we didn't want to just go to the biggest box. Let's try to pick a middle ground. And so we built the farm just using extra large VMs, which are 8-core, 14-gig machines, right? And we wanted to try to use the smallest number of virtual machines. We didn't say, oh, let's just go do, 100 virtual machines. We wanted to try to see what was that kind of sweet spot of a small number of virtual machines in a kind of a reasonably medium size or large size VM. And we also wanted to use the cloud to test our environment, to validate what we were doing. So we actually created a number of instances running the Visual Studio test environment and installed the Visual Studio test environment into another set of VMs that we actually pummeled our SharePoint site with. So we were using the power of the cloud to give us a massive amount of load that we could do a load test on our SharePoint site to validate our farm. And then what we did was in that load test, we actually scripted or recorded 78 different business scenario scripts around things that people would do. You know, upload document, delete document, move documents, go to the page, right? 78 different tests that we ran to validate all these numbers. And then what we really wanted to determine was how big is small. Like, how big of a farm could we get on a small configuration? And a small configuration is kind of defined in the PLA as being, you know, three or four web front ends, two app servers, two SQL boxes for high availability, and then an AD box, right? And so on that basic configuration, we actually loaded 300,000 users at about 250 requests per second on just that small configuration of, in this case, three web front ends. And we were using one SQL box. And we had 400,000 unique documents. And when I say unique documents, we actually, there's a tool on the internet you can use as well. We actually go out and download Wikipedia. We actually download the entire Wikipedia. And we, based on that download, we generate Word and PowerPoint documents based upon the Wikipedia. So we actually have 400,000 truly unique documents for doing things like search testing and load testing across search. So it becomes a very kind of real-world test scenario. And then we ended up with about 220 gigabyte content database running on one SQL box, one 14 gig SQL box, right? Which is a much different kind of model than you would run on-premise, right? On-premise, your goal is to find the biggest box you can find and then make sure that thing doesn't fail, right? In the cloud, it's a little bit different. So what we determined, or kind of some of the changes that we decided that were required, were really around IOPS. You know, we determined that IOPS really became the most important factor. And as we ran the test, you know, as we got up to around 250 requests per second, we were still only at about, you know, 70 to 80% CPU utilization. So we weren't really CPU bound, and we weren't really memory bound. What we really found was that we were really pushing the limits on IOPS when we got to that high level. And even in this case, we didn't spend a lot of time optimizing, right? We didn't call in our SQL gurus. We were just a bunch of SharePoint guys, you know, tweaking SQL. So we didn't really go deep into mucking with SQL to get the most power out of it. So these are kind of just out-of-the-box numbers that you would get. But what we really found was that SharePoint really relies on TempDB. So don't put TempDB on something like the D drive, right, which is your place where your page file is located that you kind of get for free when you build a VHD, right? What you really want to do is put TempDB in SQL on its own data disk, and then actually you want to spread those data disks across, spread that file across multiple data disks using file groups. Right? So within SQL, you simply use file groups to spread that TempDB across. In this case, we use four data disks, and we spread that file across those four data disks. We want to put our logs on separate disks. We want to make sure that we format each of the disks with 64-bit blocks. Right? These are kind of important things that SQL really prefers. And actually, there's a great paper that they just put out this week that has a lot of these learnings. And we've kind of cross-applied the learnings that they were doing and the stuff that we were doing and to put towards that paper. So that paper really goes into excruciating detail about all of these things that are super important, and not only for SharePoint, but for any of your SQL-based applications you're going to run in the cloud, because these all apply generically. And then the other kind of tip or pointer is really just use the C drive for SharePoint, right? Don't try to put anything else on it. Don't put your logs on it. I mean, you can get away with it in dev test. It's fine. But if you really want to create a high-performance production environment, really kind of follow these best practices, because we've done a number of test runs, and you know, we really kind of fleshed out the system. In the end, though, the goal is, again, scale out, right? The cloud is about scaling out, not up. Now, you know, obviously, Corey mentioned that you can scale up easily and scale out easily. But scale up, you can go up to i7, right, which is good. So your real goal is to scale out to a large number of boxes, right? Scale up where it makes sense, i7 if you need to, but actually scale out more boxes. And you'll see it when we go into the into the SQL, and I'll show you some of that, what that looks like. You know, also move your search databases over. You know, the great thing about SharePoint is that it's designed in a very modular way, so that SharePoint is really just a collection of services. So you could have, you know, the web front-end services, you could have Excel services, Word services, the search service, right? And all these services run on the machines. And so if you want to separate or scale out SharePoint, the way you do that is you move those services onto their own box, right? Or in essence, you turn off all the other services on the box. And then that becomes a search box, right? If everything else is turned off except search, that's a search box. But also in the way that SharePoint stores those files is that they're stored as individual database files. So you'll have a search database, and you'll have a content database for each site collection and things like this. And what that allows you to do is that you can then actually take those individual files, database files, and run them on their own SQL box. So here we're running all of the databases on one SQL box, but you could theoretically spread those all out across any number of SQL machines to get that next level of scalability beyond what we did. And so here with one SQL box, three web front ends, and two app servers, we achieved 300,000 users and 400,000 documents with sub-2-second page response times. And so it was actually a pretty interesting challenge. Now, what we found out, though, again, is that this diagram that we drew, I don't know, probably a year or so ago when we started thinking about this, is basically the same diagram that you would do on-premise. You have some web front end, you have a couple of app servers running things like central admin, and then you have SQL Server set up in a high availability mode, and then you have Active Directory, right? So the three main things that SharePoint uses, Active Directory, SQL Server, and then SharePoint, are kind of the big building blocks in building these type of applications. But what we discovered from this diagram was that after all the tests and all the configuration that we did, was this diagram still applies. This is still the exact same diagram in the cloud that you would do on-premise. So the point is that the way you're doing it, the learnings that you know about, and the way that you do things on-premise is the exact same way that you do it in the cloud, right? You don't have to go learn something new to use it in the cloud, which is the great thing about infrastructure service on Windows Azure. But to drill into these numbers just a little bit here, what I want to show you is how we kind of configured the data structure or the drive structure for each one of these. So in this diagram at the top, you can see we're looking at the web front ends. We had three web front ends. They were all running extra large virtual machines. They were all 8 cores, 14 gig machines. And we were actually using the indexing and saving the index on those web front ends as well. Now, if you were going to scale up to the next level, maybe a medium or large configuration, then you'd probably want to move that index layer, the yellow layer, to their own machines. And again, this is the configuration of SharePoint that allows you to sort of break out any one of these parts onto their own machines. But let's just kind of blow this up a little bit to see it from the back. You can see that we basically have the C drive, which is 127 gig of as of May 15th when we launched. We bumped up the size of the default disk. So we're using the default disk right out of the box, 127 gigabyte. We're actually using the new SharePoint trial image in this build, so that was really helpful to get us going. So we have our D drive that we're keeping our page file on a blob cache. That's a 600 gigabyte disk. And then we created a data drive for the E drive, which is only 40 gigabyte, and we're keeping all our log files there. And then we have a data drive, which we called F, for the index that we were storing. And again, that was the yellow section, so if you were going to make this to the next level of scalability, you would move that index server, that F drive, to another machine. So that's our web front end. Now, if we look at the middle tier, which is the application server, this is a place where, you know, back-end services are running. We were doing the index crawl from these back-end services. We were doing basic batch processing, health management, those kind of things that SharePoint also supports. Now again, here, for example, we still have our C drive, 127 gigabyte. These are also 8 core, 14 gig machines. These ones could actually probably go smaller because of the way we have this architected. We're not doing a ton of work on these back-end machines, so we probably could have even gone down into a medium-sized box here or a large and saved some money. But for right now, this is what we're doing. We have our D drive again, 600 gig, And then basically the same thing. We have our E drive for our logs, and then we have F drive where we're running all our analytics data on that. So this is really the important one, right? This is the one that is the most important to get right, because IOPS matter the most for SharePoint. And the idea here in this slide is that we have all of these set up in availability groups so that we can keep our content together. So we have our search database in one availability group, content configuration, content database. But really, let's blow this up so you can see it in the back here. Here's the basic one. C drive again, 127 gigabytes. D drive, page file, we don't touch that at all. And now for our TempDB, we actually attached 4 data disks at 500 gig apiece, and we created those as E, F, G, and H. Now there are some options in Windows Server 2012 where you could create storage pools, or you could do striping if you were using 2008. That's not the best practice, as we've gone through and done performance testing and stuff. The best practice is to create individually mapped drives and then actually use SQL file groups to span the database, if you will, across those data disks. So in this case, we're spanning the TempDB using SQL data files across E, F, G, and H. Then we created an iDrive to put our TempDB logs. And then we do our transaction logs on L. And now for the actual content, we created 4 more drives. So J, K, M, and N were 1 terabyte drives to store our content. And then we have a 1 terabyte drive to hold the search database. So this is kind of the basic setup. If you were going to do this, think about setting your database structure up this way. You may even be able to spread that across more than 4. You know, we did 4 just as a starting point. You could actually probably do 5 or 6, right? Remember, you can attach up to 16 1-terabyte disks to an extra-large VM in Windows Azure, so you have a number of disks that you can play with. And this is for example, a database. This is one server. So you theoretically, again, could create multiple servers in SharePoint, and each server could then have an additional 16-terabyte disk that you could scale out to. And so you have lots of ways that you could continue to do this. All right, let's take a look at what this looks like here. Let's see, what number are we on here? 2. I didn't switch the account. Sorry. So it was a great experience, because we determined that, you know, we really proved out that we could run this, and we had a ton of data that we're generating a white paper on that we'll release shortly. But, you know, the real takeaway is the way that you're doing it on-premise is the way you do it in the cloud. Just keep in mind the IOPS for your disks and how you do that. So let's take a look at our site real quick here. So if I actually open up this site. So here's the site running, right? That was a fairly quick response time. Now, what's really interesting is that, the thing about Windows Azure, it allows us to scale up, and it allows us to, equally as importantly, scale down. So after we ran the test, I've actually been going into the system and deleting a bunch of the machines, because I don't need them anymore. We're done with the test. So I've deleted some machines. I've turned some off using the new shutdown process, right? So my farm isn't as large as it used to be, but I'm still getting very good response time because, well, I'm one user right now, but it's still pretty good response time considering I still have 400,000 documents in here that you can see that were auto-generated at the bottom, right, from the Wikipedia pages. So we get very, very good response time from the site. Now, another interesting thing here, let's go ahead and take a look at the actual SQL machine here. So on the SQL machine, what we'll see is we can actually take a look at the number of databases if you haven't actually looked at a number of the databases that are involved in a SharePoint farm. You may be surprised at how many there actually are, because it's a significant amount. But what that does is that breakdown of all of those all those databases means that gives us the opportunity to move those around. So let me shrink the screen here. So we can see here that we have a number of databases. So all of these databases here, are databases that are generated by SharePoint. And so theoretically, you could take each one of these databases and put it on its own server if you wanted to, right? So it's that mixture of which databases go on which server and how many disks you give it, that's the space you have to performance tune the SharePoint farm to mix and match your performance considerations versus your cost considerations, right? So here in this case, we have the content database here called Content New is the name of our collection. And we can actually see that we've spread our file groups across the number of disks. And you can see those here that are spread across these disks here. So we've spread the four content files across four different disks, and we spread the log file across four disks, and we were able to spread that out using just the built-in, you know, SQL file groups features of SQL Server. So again, nothing crazy. We haven't gone in and configured the SQL box or really performance-tuned anything. We haven't really mucked under the covers at all. This was kind of, if we just ran setup out of the box, here's some things we do, and we got those performance numbers on this small farm. So I think the goal is that we really prove that we can handle these very, very large SharePoint farms running on IaaS. And what's really been great is that along the way, the performance has been getting better and better and better, and we'll continue to see that performance improve as they make improvements to the system. We just automatically get those as part of being on top of that platform. And with that, I think next what I'd like to do is bring up Michael Walsham here, and Michael's going to show you that, you know, I showed you kind of why we were doing, what we were building, how it worked. Now Michael's going to actually show you, you know, how to do this in an automated way, and he's going to actually show you some really cool scripts around building this automatically.
You didn't show the. All right. So let's see here. So my name is Michael Washam. I'm a cloud architect for Aditi, and I'm going to walk through showing you how to use PowerShell to run some of the sample scripts that we've written that allow you to do an automated deployment of Active Directory, SQL, and SharePoint 2013. Before I get started, how many of you have ever used a Windows Azure PowerShell commandlets? Okay, good. So the demo I'm going to show is starting from the very basics, from the very scratch of getting started with PowerShell. The scripts we've written are up in GitHub today, so you can download all the source code. You can customize it, extend it. You can find bugs in it and file bugs, and we can take a look and get those fixed. But they're meant as a starting point, so you can download these scripts and basically customize them to do really whatever you want with them. Right by default, we give you two sample configurations. One of them is a 9-server farm that's configured to be fully highly available, and the other one is a smaller farm, a single VM configuration that basically allows you to spin up and quickly try out SharePoint on the cloud. So the templates that we cover, this is just a general idea of what it'll create. It's going to come up with the highly available template. Will come up with a tier for each, for the web tier, for application tier, data, and identity. Now, the nice thing is we're using availability sets, just like what Corey mentioned earlier. So every tier here is in a separate rack. We have fully redundant power supply, redundant networking. And basically, if anything goes wrong in your hardware, you won't even pay attention. You won't even know about it. Windows Azure will just take care of it, and your SharePoint farm will stay up and running. And that's the same way for each tier in the farm we deploy. SQL Server is deployed in always-on and mirroring mode. So we have two servers, a primary and a secondary, that are mirrored. And we also have a witness to watch if one of them fails, it'll automatically switch it over so you have uptime. The tiers by default the front end is using large instances. You can modify a simple config file. Well, not kind of simple. You can modify a config file to change those to do whatever you want. The second template we create is much simpler. This is a single virtual machines template, and you're basically going to get one virtual machine per tier. So one web server, one SQL server, one AD. No availability is configured here. This is really meant for spinning up quickly just to try it out or do some dev and test, deploy a web part, whatever you want to do with it. So without further ado, let me jump in and I'll show you how to actually run this script. So the first thing you want to do is go to our GitHub repo. And that was the URL on the slides earlier, so you can grab the slides later and get it. But if you go to github.com/windows-azure-sdk-tools-samples, and you can get all the source code that I'm about to show you. And more importantly, you can go to the wiki page. And this is all the instructions of everything I'm about to show you. So whenever I walk through installing and configuring everything, don't feel like you have to remember it all, because good luck with all that. So the first thing you want to do is go to code. And there's a zip link here that you can use to download all the PowerShell scripts. So I can open up this zip file and copy all this content out. And next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to open up, we have a master script that we run. So actually, before I do that, the first thing I want to show you, because no one here or very few people have ever actually used a Windows Azure PowerShell command, let's just walk through setting those up. So to be able to automate things in Azure using PowerShell, you need to go to windowsazure.com, click Downloads, Command Line Tools, and Windows Azure PowerShell. This will kick off the web platform installer, and I've already installed them, so it's that fast. Actually, if you haven't installed them, it's almost as fast, so it's a really quick download. From there, you'll want to run, I'm a big fan of PowerShell ISE, but there's numerous other PowerShell editors you can run, but the key is you want to make sure you run this as admin, because we're going to enable Cred SSP, and we're going to also install a cert or search store to use remote PowerShell, and it requires an elevation. Is that big enough font, or does it need to be a little bigger? Okay. So we will load up the Windows Azure module. Oops, not Microsoft Office. This under Windows Azure, PowerShell. If you install and then reboot, you just have to type in import module Azure. If you install and don't reboot, you have to type in this really long path. And now all the PowerShell commandlets are loaded. So to actually configure PowerShell to be, have access to your subscription, you need to run git azure publish settings file. And this is a commandlet that knows how to automate IE. It basically takes you to your URL where you log in with your Windows Azure admin account. And it's going to give me a publish settings file. It basically has all the certificates and everything I need for my subscription. Slowly. There we go. Okay, and it's a really long file. But luckily, PowerShell ISE has great IntelliSense. So now that I've downloaded this, this is going to import all the subscriptions my email account had access to. So I have admin rights on all of these, and they're actually going to configure PowerShell to use those. Oh, sorry about that. Really loud. And why that's important is you need to know all your subscriptions. So I'm going to run another PowerShell commandlet called get Azure subscription that will dump out a bunch of information. And the thing that's important here is the subscription name. So the subscription name that you need, or that I need today, is Cloud Practice Sales Demos. So all I'm going to do is put that up here so I remember it. So this is the subscription I'm going to use to actually deploy a SharePoint farm into Azure. So now I'm going to open up my master script. And This is a script that I just downloaded from GitHub, and it basically has a bunch of parameters you can use. It's a script that has one big function in it called autoconfigure, and a bunch of different parameters that you can specify to actually tell it what kind of SharePoint form you want to create. So the first thing I'm going to specify is the subscription name I want to use. And I'm also going to give it my Active Directory domain name. You can actually use these scripts to deploy into an existing Active Directory if you want to, or you can actually, whatever you want to deploy to. So by default, if you don't specify domain at all, it'll spin up corp.contoso.com. If you just hate working with Contoso, the company just really annoys you, feel free to pick something else. So I'm a big fan of Fabricam. So I'm going to do fabricam.com. But before I get started, I almost skipped one thing, and you'll find out later, about an hour from now, whenever you're running this script, that it's going to fail and it's going to really annoy you. The first thing you need to do before you run this is you have to enable CredSSP on your machine. CredSSP is a authentication option in Windows that allows you to take DNS or your domain credentials from your laptop and pass those to a server up in the cloud or another in your environment, and allow it to take those credentials and use on your behalf to another server. So if you're familiar with the double hop problem in Windows, passing credentials around, this is how you get around it. And first thing I need to do to enable CredSSP is I'm going to enable it on star.cloudapp.net. My servers are all going to be created in cloudapp.net. It's going to auto-generate the service, so I don't know what the host name is going to be yet, so I'm just going to give it a wildcard. And I'm going to tell it the role will be client. So PowerShell is going to warn me that I'm doing something crazy. Yes, I do want to be crazy. So now I trust everything. And there's another step you have to run. And this is, of course, all in the wiki. So don't feel like you have to remember this. But make sure you remember it enough to look in the wiki, because if you don't, you'll regret it a couple hours from now. So you need to run gpedit.msc under administrative templates, system, credentials, delegation. You need to go into allow delegating fresh credentials with NTLM only server authentication. I'm sure everyone here is going to remember that, jotting it down. Go to enable and type in another secret code here. And now we really trust cloudapp.net for CredSSP delegation. Okay. That's everything we need to do to configure CredSSP. So whenever I hit F5, unless I got a typo, which I probably do, it should actually run. So as you can see here, I'm using the single VMs template. If I wanted to pick the highly available, I just type in highly available, and I'm going to walk through some of the configuration files after this. So I'll go ahead and hit F5, hope for the best. What this auto-configure actually does is it's going to generate a storage account for you. It's going to generate a cloud service name. It's going to generate a password for you if you want. It'll basically do everything needed to spin up a SharePoint farm. This is really useful if you just want to spin it up, try it out. If you actually want to use this for doing more actual deploying your code, you're probably going to want to get a little bit deeper into the config. You're going to probably want to give it an admin account that you use, passwords. You're probably going to want to have a little bit more control. And you can do that all through the script by specifying additional parameters. So while that's running, let me flip over to some of the configuration files. So I have one that I've already ran here. And it was a highly available one. You certainly didn't want to wait for me to run that one. And takes one piece of warning when you go back and try this is whenever you go to deploy the highly available one, because it's very serialized how it does the deployment. It has to do AD, then wait for AD to boot, then it'll do SQL and wait for SQL to be configured. It takes anywhere from 2 to 4 hours to run, just depending on the mood. I think it runs right around 3.5 hours. So make sure your laptop or whatever you're running it on is not going to go to sleep, because you'll have to start over if that's the case. So what the configuration files do is they basically have all the different configuration for your virtual machines. So for Active Directory, you can see that we have two domain controllers here. One of them is DC type New Forest, and the other one is Replica. So if I wanted to add another domain controller, I would just paste in DC, another DC there and put it Replica. I can specify my service account, basically everything you need that you'd have to look up to figure out how to do this, the PowerShell script kind of generate for you. A version of this that's actually already generated. Let me show the SharePoint one. So SharePoint 1, this is a password to the farm. Feel free to hack it. I mean, if you can type that password in, you deserve it. You can, of course, type in an easier password than this, but this is one that's going to be automatically generated, so just consider that as a punishment for being too lazy to type in your own password. So we'll generate the password for you. We actually will also create the virtual network. So if you don't want to, if you want to use your own virtual network, you want to customize it, whatever you want to do, you have two choices here. Under config, there's going to be a directory called advnet. You can modify this network. If you're a VNet expert, this all looks good. If you've never used it, this is like gibberish. But one thing you can do is you can go and create it in the Windows Azure Management Portal ahead of time, and then you can export to XML so you don't have to figure out what this looks like. Another option is in the AD, we can actually, there's a flag that tells you not to create a VNet and use an existing one. So either way, and of course it's all in a wiki, so again, you don't have to remember all of it. So in the autogen, just to go down to the more specifics on SharePoint, here's how we define the two VM roles. So we have a SharePoint app servers and a SharePoint web servers. In each tier, we specify the instance size and the image. So you can see that we have the SharePoint trial image, we have the VM size. I had to pick small because my subscription just doesn't have enough cores for me to run the entire big HA farm. So if you have a bigger core quota than I do, feel free to put it at extra large or large. You can specify additional data disks, subnet names, admin accounts, etc. But for the most part, if you're just running the auto-configure script, you'll never have to go into the config files. It's really only if you want to go change instance sizes or specify custom virtual networks. So let me jump out to the actual SharePoint farm itself. So this is the SharePoint farm that I created that's highly available. It should have 9 servers in it. As soon as virtual machines load. And while it's loading, let me actually browse to the site. So I'm going to log in with my domain credentials, and of course, I don't know what the password is. So whenever you finish your run, it'll actually dump out the auto-generated password at the console window. So you should write that down whenever you're done. If not, it will actually be in the configuration files that are generated. Okay, and there's our SharePoint site. And the other thing that this will do is it will generate this exact same site for the admin side. It puts it on 20,000. So I can use the same credentials and log into my admin site, manage web apps. I can go create new web applications, whatever I want to do. The default template we use whenever you just spin it up is just a blank publishing site. So nothing real fancy. You can pick a different template if you want. You can put whatever template name you want. Oops. I promised Corey it worked earlier. Yeah. So let's try that one more time. There we go. See, woohoo. So welcome to the publishing site. Right. So everything that everyone does in SharePoint works. So now we published content. Woo! Okay. So that, if you have patience, the script for the single VM, if you want to try this one, this one's much simpler to get started with. It's very simple configuration. It takes maybe an hour to run. It spins up all 3 nodes, and then if you want to graduate up to the highly available ones, that one will take about between 3 and 4. But that's pretty much it from an automation perspective.
Do you want to go to the portal and show?
Oh, yeah, thank you. I almost forgot that. So from the portal, you can see all the different virtual machines that we're spinning up. You can see DC1 here. This is the one that we're spinning up for our new farm, and DC1 below it is our existing farm, the existing HA. And if I go into DC1 for my existing HA farm, going to configure, you can see we have availability sets configured. So both of those domain controllers are on separate racks in the data center. The same with our SQL servers. We have all three, including our quorum. So at any given time, we will have at least two virtual machines up and running for our cluster. And the web servers also are configured with load balancing. So one thing to keep in mind is we also have these scripts will generate a health probe on that load balance endpoint. So whenever, what that means is in addition to load balancing traffic between the two web servers, we'll also, the load balancer will also go and ping IIS directly and look for an HTTP 200 to make sure that it's actually up and running and it's not just the machine itself is up, but the web server is actually responding. So it gives you an additional level of availability. So, and remember, all those can be downloaded off of github.com. Feel free to post bugs. Feel free to, if you are really interested, you can extend these, add new functionality, and actually submit changes back to us. This is a community-driven project, so any additional improvements would absolutely be happy to review and take in.
There was one thing that I did want to actually show here that that I had mentioned earlier. When you click on one of these guys, actually, let's go SQL. Thank you, Michael, by the way.
Thank you.
That's rude of me. Good demo. Yeah. I thought so. We didn't get any applauses, so this was all you.
Okay. I'm the first.
Woo-hoo. That's right.
Thanks, Corey.
Like I mentioned here, the scale-up option. So you can go to one of these SQL servers. You're running it. You realize, hey, it's a little bit sluggish. I'm comfortable paying a little bit more. You can go in here, and you can pick these large sizes, whether they're sized with good names like medium and large or really good names like A6 and A7. Or I7. I think you were saying I7.
He was saying I.
Okay. Okay. I think that was that. And then, you know, the one other thing here, you know, these machines are running, and so you are able to see sort of the monitoring of the machines using CPU, disk, if it comes in here. All the configuration here, the disks that are attached. So this is all available through the portal. You can sort of see what's running. You can see the public IP address that's connected, and so on and so forth. Doesn't seem to be showing. Okay, well, maybe some other time. Okay.
F5.
Let's go back here and then let's open it up, I think, for questions at this point. And these are the resources. Great. Any questions? We have just a few minutes left. Happy to take a few. I can pull Paul back up if we need to. Anything? Yeah, go ahead.
We have an infrastructure right now, SharePoint 2010, but we're wanting to move to 2013.
And, yeah. Yeah, great question. So the question effectively was, what kind of connectivity can you have if you're deploying in Windows Azure using SharePoint? The primary thing is the connectivity story is the virtual network solution that we talked about. It allows you to, if you've got a VPN device or you want to set up a software VPN device, you can connect to a gateway in the virtual network that we spin up for you, and then you can have that connectivity to AD. And in fact, we find Active Directory is probably the most common usage case for virtual network and VPN connectivity is to just connect an Active Directory, simply because it gives you that identity, it gives you those IDs to move up into the cloud for SharePoint. So that's a great question and definitely a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to answer? Either way. Go ahead.
Either one. So there's a couple of things. From a cloud service perspective, at a networking level, you can there's for SharePoint especially, this is a little tricky. It's the question is always, where do you specify DNS? Do you specify DNS at the VNet level, or can you actually specify it at the cloud service level? How the scripts do it, the automation, we actually just add the DNS server to the virtual network. But if you want more flexibility, whenever you add new cloud services, you can actually specify the virtual machines at the cloud or the DNS at the cloud service level. So it gives you a little bit more flexibility on how to actually do that DNS layout.
You know, and I think another interesting aspect to that as well is maybe you want to have your web front ends in one cloud service, because remember, cloud service is the internet boundary. It's the It's your DNS name that you could expose to the outside world by endpoints. So let's imagine I want to have my AD and my SQL boxes with zero endpoint turned on so that theoretically nobody can get to them from the outside world, almost like a DMZ kind of scenario. And then just expose my web front ends in a single cloud service that does have the endpoints turned on with the load balancers, and then all the other machines in my farm don't have any endpoints turned on, right? So.
Great. So we'll actually be up here for a few minutes, but I want to make sure that I get you guys out on time to your next session. I hope you have a wonderful tech ed. Mark Rusinovich is giving a talk right now actually about infrastructure as a service as a whole. And so if you want to see a little bit more about some of the details about virtual network and setup, go to his talk. It's a good intro. And with that, thank you guys very much for your time, and hopefully have a good day.